We can start with that.
Radio.
I stroll through the pictures, what I've left behind. You want again. I'm locked up in memories, they all intertwine. The memories in my mind. I know tomorrow, 'cause that dawn will come. You will never know just what you have done.
Good evening, and welcome to the Stop Child Abuse Now show. This is scan number 2612. That's 2612. Tonight we're going to have Annie Margus. How do you say her last name? Is that right? Margus? Annie?
It's Margus, like a J.
Okay. So anyway, she's from Long Beach, California, and she grew up in a large Catholic family, and most of her five siblings fell victim to a variety of abuses. And boy, we know all that about that, what that's like. But anyway, she is the one that comes on Tuesdays and Thursdays. We have our people that come on Tuesdays and Thursdays, and they're the professors or whatever. And they're professionals. That's what they are, and they're professionals. And they're going to speak about, tonight we're going to be speaking about several different topics. And I think that Annie and also Pamela have something that they want to put together. So that's why I'm going to stay mute until I know what they're doing. Okay. So, but, well, let me see how it goes, and then we'll see what happens. Okay, but first of all, I should read the mission statement, because that's something that's important. Educating the public, this is what we do. We especially is related to getting society over the taboo of discussing childhood sexual abuse. Presenting the facts that show child abuse to be a pandemic, worldwide problem that affects everyone. That's number one. Offering two, and this is number two, offering hope for healing through numerous paths and providing many services to adult survivors of child abuse. And information for anyone interested in the many issues involving prevention, intervention, and recovery. Now, somewhere along the line tonight, we will also speak about recovery, because we really don't address that much. I'm always talking about prevention because I think that's so important. Pedophiles, as I always say, do not like educated kids, okay? They just simply don't. They'll walk away, find their next prey, P-R-E-Y. And intervention is to teach people, you know, how to speak to a child if they think a child has been abused, you know, what type of wording to use, and certainly not to act aggressive in any way, because the child will, you know, you might scare the kid, and the child will shut down. Okay, they won't tell you anything. And then, of course, we have recovery. So there's all different kinds of ways to recover, and this we're going to be talking about that tonight too. And but I'm going to be quiet now, and believe it or not, and let Annie take over. Annie and Pamela, actually, and we have a list of people here that are calling in. That's very good. So our number here is 646-595-2118. That's 646-595-2118. Okay, and you know, don't be afraid to call in on this show, because it's easy. Easy in the sense that if you have a question, you have someone here who may be able to help you. Okay. And we survivors, we are survivor professionals, many of us, and we can help you. We can certainly guide you. And something else I want to bring to the attention of people, I want you to get really, really involved with the NASCA website, because that's something that I use a lot. And you know, it has programs, it has highlights, it has intervention, and just like I was saying, prevention and recovery. It tells you how to speak to your children, and so forth and so on. It just has a wealth of information. So please do look at, you know, the NASCA website, NAASCA.org. That's NASCA.org. Okay. Now we've got our people together, and maybe more will call. That'll be good. Annie, you're on.
Okay, thank you so much.
Mm-hmm.
Hi, everybody. My name is Annie Marges, and I'm a survivor of childhood incest. And I like to think that I'm a recovering and maybe recovered survivor, because I do very well today. I don't have a lot of flashbacks, and I'm not anxious. All of the symptoms of being an abused child that crippled me all my life seem to pretty much mostly be gone. And that's because of what I've done over many years to recover. But, you know, it's not really that many years. I didn't start even thinking about getting help with the fact that I was incested until I retired from working. And I had to retire because I was ill, so I was only 49. But I was 49 before I sought any help at all. And when I did go, luckily, I was appointed toward a peer-to-peer support group where you get to tell your story and nobody's allowed to comment on your story. You just get 5 minutes to talk, whatever you need to say, and no, there's no back talk or cross talk. So it's a really safe place to tell your story. And I started going to those meetings and listening to other people tell their stories. And that's what opened my eyes, because I really liked these people. They were wonderful people. And when they told me what had happened to them, I was mad. I got really mad at their abusers, and I felt all this love towards them. And eventually it occurred to me that I should be mad at my abuser, and I should be feeling love for me. And it took a long time to really let that sink in. A long time. It took a long time. But now I do believe it. I do. So I started with this group. And then the other thing I did mainly was start writing. At first I wrote a poem, and it was just a short poem about child abuse, and I let one person see it. And that was my big opening step. This is before I retired, but only a little bit before.
Sorry.
I'm sorry, that was my phone. So I wrote that poem, and then the poem morphed into a short story. And the short story, I showed that to a different person and got a kind of unpleasant reaction from that. And eventually, the short story morphed into a play, a theatrical play, because I kept hearing dialogue all the time. And so a play is all dialogue, so that's what I was writing down. It became a play. And that play was done reader's theater style, where people just read the lines, but they're not acting. It was done 2 times, and so I'm really, really happy about that. And I would love to have it actually done, you know, with scenes and actors and everything. So it's a dream. Someday that will happen, I hope. Mm-hmm. And then from the play, I gave the play to a producer who was actually a client of mine, to read it. And he read it, and he said, yeah, let's do the movie. But you have to rewrite it, he said. If we're going to do the movie, it has to be about childhood, because the play was actually about being an adult survivor and what that's like. So the screenplay he wanted about childhood. So I wrote that. That was really difficult. And I gave it to him, and he read it, and he said, oh, no, I couldn't possibly be involved with this. It was just too much for him. He couldn't do it. So he let me down. But luckily, there was there was another producer, and he wanted to do it. And so the movie sort of in pre-production right now. And then I decided to write a novel version, because that's what I always wanted to do, was write books. So I turned the screenplay into a novel, and it was published in October. And doing all this publishing under my own name really, really helped me. That was my biggest step, I think, in recovery, was putting the play out there first with my name on it and saying to the world, yeah, my dad did this to me, and it's not my fault, I'm not ashamed, and I wrote this. So that was a big part.
Mm-hmm. Well, that is a big part. That is a big part. And, you know, I congratulate you on all the things that you're doing, you know, and I can't wait to hear more about it. You know, when it comes to Fruitation, you want it to become like a play or a movie. At times, people do come on this show, and there's been a couple of people that ended up on Lifetime. They wanted to make mine into a movie. But let me tell you something. On Lifetime, they change your story. They do that.
Mm.
And in order... Yeah, we had someone on, I think about a year, maybe a year and a half ago now. And we knew her story as she told it on our radio station here, okay, and our show. And by the time it hit Lifetime, it was so choppy. And if I had not known her story ahead of time, I wouldn't have known it was the same story. So be careful of that. I'm just letting you know, okay, because a lot of times... like with Lifetime, it's sort of like a lightweight. I consider that lightweight. And they can't handle certain things. Like you just mentioned that one person said, oh, no, we could never handle, with the child abuse. So then therefore you had to find someone else. Sometimes you have to shop around a little bit. Okay, I'm just letting you know that. But this is something that we survivors do. And I think it's a wonderful thing. I really do. Because if we can get our videos out there, if we can get into a movie or something to that effect, more people see it, okay? More people see it. And that's really good. I'm really happy for you. Congratulations is what you're doing.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Yeah, and you bet. I'm always in the cheering section here. Yes, I am. I'd like to... I like to promote people, you know, and if they're parts of organizations or if they're doing something like what you're doing or if they're writing a book or they're doing poetry or they're doing their artwork or whatever it is, you know, that brings forth awareness, you know, to child abuse and also to how it affects you in adulthood, especially if you don't get the help that you need, okay? Because we do go through all kinds of things, don't we? I know I did. Oh, my God. Okay, so we have Pamela here, and we have Bill, and we have Mary Ellen from New York, and we have Mary Knight. Oh, I better put my glasses on because it looks like night to me. Here we go, Oregon. Okay, and I'm going to go down the panel and see, first of all, let's see what Pamela has to say. Go ahead, Pamela.
Welcome, Miss Annie. Thank you for coming on as a co-host at the last minute when somebody had to get a COVID shot. We're very proud of you for doing this and glad that the person's getting their COVID shot. We talked earlier, Annie, about, something in recovery that we wanted to address, and that was did you tell when you told and, you know, how it affected you as far as recovery. And so, you know, I wanted you to speak to that, but, you know, before we do, we could go down the panel, next to Mary, and she can welcome you on. And let's see, we have two Marys, Mary Ellen and Mary Knight. So if you remember, Annie, we talked about recovery and about that question as a topic.
Yes. I do remember.
Okay. So do you want to open up and ask the question first, or do you want to go down the panel first? What would you like to do?
Well, I think I'll tell the question first so everybody knows what the topic's going to be. And that is, did you tell about the abuse? And if you did tell, when was that? Under what situation was that? And if you never did tell, why not? So that's the topic. And I can't really call on people because I don't have the list of people in front of me.
Well, I'll do that. Don't worry. I'll call on the people. Okay. All right. So we will have the question. So many times we don't want to tell. And I'm not going to get my mouth into this quite yet because mine is a little bit different. And I'd rather go to the panel and then I'll put my two cents in. Okay. Let's do it that way. Well, Pamela, first of all, let's start with you. Oh, she's busy. She's on the switchboard here. Okay, let's go down to Bill. I'm going to open up his mic and see if he wants to say hello and see if he wants to answer the question. Go ahead.
I didn't hear a question. I wanted to say thank you to Annie, though, because when we had a last-minute cancellation yesterday, she agreed with Pamela to come on and help us out tonight. It's terrific. You know, we have these people that who are regularly scheduled, but when something as important as a COVID shot comes up, we want them to get their shot. So, if you can reframe the question quickly, Carol, I'll be happy to answer. I can answer anything, as you know. I was talking to Christina for a moment.
Okay. No, let Annie, go ahead. You, because everybody else may want to hear it also. Go ahead.
Okay,
rephrase
the question. The question is, did you tell? When did you tell? And if you did not, why not?
I had a 3-year period of time where I spent a month at a time with the same creditor over and over 3 times. And then I went to high school. And I went to a boarding school, which was also a minor seminary. And all these people were Catholics, and I was a good Catholic boy. And actually, in the school was my freshman year of high school, and it was a minor seminary, so I was actually thinking of becoming a priest. And just after I got there, within a month, let's say, one of the people who was our prefect, our supervisor, lived with us, asked me to talk to him, and to make a long story short, I told him my whole story, and I was very relieved, because I had not told anybody else. And I did it in the form of a confession, where you're telling your priests this, you know, your transgressions and sins and so forth, and it's a discussion. I mean, it took a couple hours to tell my story. In his room there in our dormitories, and I thought, wow, I got help. Thank God. I've been looking for help for years now. Unfortunately, he turned out to be a predator too, and I had no idea. So he went ahead and told a couple of other priests and brothers who told a classmate, so forth. And that was my first attempt to really tell the whole story, and it fell flat on its face, and it cost me years. So there you go.
Thank you, Bill.
Okay. Okay, that's good. That's good. Thank you for that. Let me go down to Mary Ellen from New York. And Mary Ellen, did you? How old were you when you told? And if you didn't want to tell, why didn't you tell?
Well, my abuse started when I was 5 and ended when I was 13. And at that time, my family all split over a big fight. Thank God. And at one point, months later, my mom was hesitant and thinking she might go back to my father. And at that, I don't even know what made her ask, but she asked each of us if we wanted to go home or if not. And when she asked me, I said, absolutely not. And she said, why? And I said, because I'm being sexually abused and nobody's taking care of the fact or protecting me. And I remember the look on her face, like, whoa. But I had four sisters who all stood there and swore to God nothing has ever happened to them and that I was lying, and oh my God, it was awful. But thank God I didn't go back. We didn't go back. And it's kind of been a taboo subject ever since. I've not been allowed to discuss it. The family denies it. You know, I do my healing outside of my family, unfortunately, because, yeah, they still till today, they praise my father, and I just done my healing, and I know my truth, so. Yeah.
Well, you're doing a fine job, though, Mary Ellen. Yes, you are. Yes, you are.
Thank you. Thank you.
Yeah.
I'm happy to be part of your family here.
Well, we're happy to have you too. I always like it when you call in. I really do. So,
well, thank you.
Yeah. So, anyway, Annie, that's her answer to that one. Let's go down to Mary Knight, okay? And she's from Oregon. Mary, are you there?
Hi. Yeah.
Hi.
Can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Moved to Bellingham, Washington. So, that's where I'm. Bellingham, Washington is almost into Canada. I can actually see the Canadian mountains right now as we talk, view from my house. But I was abused throughout my childhood, and I did not remember that abuse until I was 37 years old. When I did remember, I had children, and I confronted my parents. My children had visited my parents before and were supposed to visit them again, and so I couldn't let that happen. But I also couldn't go public very well. I mean, I told people, I told friends, I told people at church, but I was a clinical social worker. I was doing divorce custody evaluations at the time, and if I told someone, I could be asked about it on the witness stand, and it might have, then it could have been said that I hadn't been, that I was biased in a situation like Mary Ellen's, that's so sad that, I mean, I can understand why you came out with that information at the time your mom was thinking about going back, and you know, it could make it seem as though I wasn't being objective as a professional. So I couldn't go public while working as a social worker. And also, my first marriage was, I was basically not allowed to do that in my first marriage. I have now gone public. I've made a film, a documentary about my childhood. I've made a film about my first marriage, about the verbal abuse I experienced. And I have all those things on my website. So it has been really good to go public for me, but scary and not like good all the time. I actually had my husband and I've been married, my second marriage, since 2010. We became foster parents when we moved to Bellingham. My husband retired. We moved to Bellingham. We became foster parents. And I had a harder time being approved because of my extreme childhood abuse, which should not have been the case. We are licensed foster parents now. We do respite foster care, so we don't have a child with us right now, but we will this weekend. Children come for usually two nights at a time so that their full-time foster parent can get a break. So I was approved, but even, you know, that there are some things that are hard about being public, and that was a fairly recent thing that happened to me. So I do not encourage anyone to go public or to disclose until and unless it's a good time in their life.
Right. I agree with that. What do you think, Annie?
Yes, it's interesting. I didn't think about what kind of repercussions I could have from publishing my book, really. other than I didn't want to talk to my mother about it. I know that. But I didn't think about, like, public repercussions. But it is. It's true. People do have ideas now when about who Annie Margis is related to childhood illness. That's what I'm related to now. And that's, you know, it's kind of sad in a way, but it's okay for right now because that's what I'm doing right now.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, that's good, you know, and I'm sorry I laughed, but I could identify with that, with the mother thing. So many of us have mother issues, you know, and it really does get in the way. Let's go down to Darlene from Tennessee. She's here. Hey, Darlene. Oh, Darlene, are you there?
She's probably muted. Darlene,
yeah, I'm
here. I'm here.
Okay. Have you been listening or what?
I've been listening.
Okay, Tweety.
Well, that's kind of a hard question.
Well, you know, with some people it might be. You're right.
Because the first time I said anything about
your issues. Go ahead.
Like any time I said anything about the abuse, you know, as a, like whenever I went to church was the first time I exposed it when one of the people, I guess I was about 15 years old, and I told him that my mother was beating me because I was sneaking out of the house to go to church, and I needed some help. I needed some adult help to save me, you know, from the abuse or whatever. And the guy said, you need to be like Job. And I guess the other times for the sexual abuse that I kind of had blocked out and everything, I never really told anybody till therapy. There was one person that I did tell that was an elder. It was when it first started coming out, an elder at church. And he said that I was a liar because I told him with a smile on my face. I didn't have the right kind of expression on my face when I first told. But when I first told, it's like wasn't allowed to have any other expressions but the smile. You know, we weren't allowed to frown or anything, you know.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so I was called a liar when I first started telling my story. So it took me a while later and getting away from my divorce, I'm away from my husband, getting a divorce, staying away from the toxic people in my life, and then I started telling my story.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. You sure did, didn't you? Yes, you did. Yes, you did. You did a fine job, too. Yes, you did. Let me see
Thank
what
you.
Annie has to say about that. Yes, honey. Annie, what do you have to say about that?
I think it's a wonderful thing whenever anybody is able to share. It's probably one of the hardest things a survivor has to do, to say it out loud and identify with it. I think most of my life I had amnesia, and I wasn't really aware of it. I had lots of debilitating consequences, but I didn't know why. Now I know why.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, you know, in my case, I have a big mouth. We all know this. I had a big mouth when I was a kid too. So I tried to tell. Well, it's the truth. Look, what you see is what you've got with me. There's no falseness. I tried to tell. Excuse me. When I was 7 and a half, okay, I finally did tell, because I was in a pedophile house. And I didn't tell my mother, though. Oh, no. I had mother issues, too. So I told a drunk aunt of mine, hold on, that I got along with very, very well. And I didn't care if she was drunk, but I didn't know if she was going to remember what I said to her, okay? And but she did. She did remember, and she got me out of there. So then I got into another situation. I'm not going to tell my story, but I can tell you this, that when children try to tell, okay, excuse me, when children try to tell and people don't believe them, okay, this really scares a child even more, because I always say that it takes guts, you know, to tell your story, to tell your secret. Many times we're in very volatile situations, which was always in my case. There was no grooming or anything like that. And, you know, for me to tell, it was a very frightening thing to do. And, okay, I got out of that house and got put into another house, and which was family, by the way. And I was treated much better. Thank you so much. I started to gain weight. I had lost some of my hair because I was so malnutritioned. And I always held that against my mother because, you see, she would come to pay these people, the first house, the pedophile house, money. I was like a business deal, you know what I'm saying? So, you know, it was very, very upsetting, very upsetting. And so it went on and on and on. And in the second house, I was fed. I did have a good roof over my head. It was my mother's brother. And the pedophile tried to run me down with a vehicle for telling me, or telling on him. He actually went to my school, which wasn't far away, and tried to kill me because he said he was going to if I ever did, you see. So I never got together with my mother. We never bonded. There was no bonding. So many of us are like this. It's not just me, okay? Many of us have issues with one parent or the other parent. And, you know, with boys a lot of times it's with their fathers. And with girls a lot of times it's with their mothers. Maybe it could be with both. But maybe both parents are not good parents. They're not meant to be parents. Did I feel any relief in telling? No. I was just trying to survive, okay? I didn't feel any relief in telling my story until after suffering many, 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 many years of panic attacks. I was able to say, mm-mm, to my panic attacks, get rid of them. And I was able to go out and address universities and tell my story. And I was in the newspapers, and I'd written a book, and that did well, and it's still selling like hotcakes, all through different other companies. I don't understand why. I don't get any money for it. I don't care. All I want is for the story out there, because we, who right here on this panel, we're survivors. And with me, it's not a money deal. For me, it's to get what happens to children when they don't have proper homes, when they don't have any guidance, when they don't have any boundaries, because I had no boundaries. So therefore, I did make a couple of boundaries for myself because I wasn't quite as disturbed, if you will, as the other people that I hung out with. But it was a very rough life. And then so often, and Annie, you know this, you go into a marriage. In fact, many of us on this panel know this. You go into a marriage, you're all in love, you know, and my first husband was into biking. I love bikes. And then also, too, we'd go to the city. He'd take me to French restaurants. He bought me clothing because I didn't have that much clothing. I was trying to work, but, you know, I didn't have a car, so it was very hard. And so I thought I'd died and gone to heaven when I met this man. But he didn't go to Vietnam, but he was drafted. He went to Korea instead, which didn't make sense to me because the Korean War was over. But he went to Korea, and when he came back, he was a monster. So
Carol,
it's very hard. You know, what I'm going to say here, Pamela, is it also affects our relationships.
Exactly.
How to choose. Okay.
Well, my question to you is, were you able to tell that husband, and how did it affect him and your recovery? Did it push back your recovery, stagnate your recovery? How did it work when you tried to open up to him about your abuse?
You mean my first husband?
Yeah.
You know, he saw a lot from my mother and my stepfather. My mother remarried, and he saw a lot from that. I didn't have to tell him anything. He didn't care. And we didn't talk about it, really, to be honest with you. And he saw a lot too. I don't know how to put this. We owned businesses, and we would go to the house, and we'd go into the businesses, and both of them saw that I was the outcast, I was a black sheep, I was this, I was that. And they'd get mad. They did. They actually got mad. But it wasn't anything that we spoke about. So
okay.
while I was While I was growing up, Annie, for answer for you, I would tell and I would tell and I would tell, you know, and it didn't do any good. I had to make it on my own. I had to grow up. I had to see that I was doing some things that were wrong, you know, out on the streets and stuff like that too, and take responsibility for it in my own mind. I did not ever go to jail, thank God. I did not OD, thank God. I had friends that did with both. So that's why I said I'm going to wait until the end, because my story is different. Go ahead.
Did you ever get therapy? Did you ever go to therapy?
Yes.
And open up?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. Okay. I went to a Catholic church. Yeah, I'll answer this. I went to a Catholic church, and they were born-again Christians, and I became one, too. And they did, you know, when you have a huge, church and a huge prayer group, people come from all different walks of life. So there
right.
were counselors there, and they got a hold of me, honey. Oh, yes, they did. Whoa. And that's okay. Yes, yes, they helped me. And they took me down and gave me a battery of tests in town outside of the church, and I passed them all magnificently. And they said that I was not stupid. And, go ahead.
How long after that did you find NASCA? How long after did you go somewhere else before you found NASCA, or did you go to NASCA after that?
Actually, I was with someone else. Yeah, I was.
This isn't my first
NACA show.
Yeah, is this about Annie or Carol? This interview.
I don't know, man.
I mean, really?
We're just talking back and forth. Well, you had your say, so now I have mine. And Annie will respond to what's been said.
I really kept mine short because I'm a panelist. I kept it short, but okay. Go ahead.
Well, I was asked questions. Go ahead.
No, you're not supposed to be interviewed. Why are you being interviewed is what I'm asking.
Oh, be still. Oh, I'll bite you. I'm going to find my way out to California. I'll bite that dude.
Well, the reason I was, because me and Annie were doing this together tonight, and I was what we're trying to do is see the connection between telling your story and recovery. Mm-hmm. Okay,
right.
So a
right.
lot of times, so when you look back over your life as an adult, you see how you were trying to tell as a kid, but you couldn't. But it all had
mm-hmm.
to do with trying to recover. And so, you know, there's to me. You know, some of us have only a few ways that telling our story, only a few times and we got into recovery. And, you know, some of us have multiple times that we've gone to multiple places trying to get to recovery. So that was the whole point of the topic tonight.
Okay.
So
I think I answered the questions that were asked of me, though, and that's what needed to be done. Okay.
Okay.
Well, it's my
good
turn
enough.
Because I didn't get I didn't get to tell my story about recovery and telling, okay?
Go ahead.
I couldn't tell. I was abused from the age of 4 to 18 sexually by my mother's second husband. She pimped me out, and I couldn't tell nobody there. He had threatened to kill me. So when I left there at 18, I ran away, repressed all the memories, told nobody. In my 30s, when I got saved, there was a Christian lady who I tried to open it to, and she wouldn't even talk to me about it because I can tell you she didn't want to. It boggled her mind. It was not something she wanted to talk about. And so later I started trying to talk to other people, and it wasn't until I got with NASCA at the age of in my 50s, y'all, Till I started telling my story and wrote my book, okay, about my sexual abuse. And so now I'm past recovery and being an advocate telling my story. So that's what the whole thing was supposed to be tonight, how telling your story is affecting your recovery.
Okay.
Annie?
Well, you asked me a lot of questions, so I wanted to answer them. Okay, so Annie, what do you think about all of this?
Well, I think it's interesting. People have different stories about their telling, but there's so many things that we all have in common. Like one of the reasons that we don't tell our story is that we're ashamed, that we think somehow it was our fault. We blame ourselves for it. And if we tell somebody, then we're telling something terrible about ourselves. And that's really hard to do. Of course, we're not telling anything terrible about ourselves because it wasn't our fault. But that's an idea that some people have, I think.
Okay. Well, I think, you know, a lot of times there's a lot of shame, and I never felt shame. See, I'm not quite the same because I always knew that it was wrong. I didn't feel any shame. I was angry because somehow I just knew it wasn't right. And when you're a kid and you're trying to tell your story, you know, to someone, trying to tell them, hey, look, I need help. This one's doing that one's doing this. I'm not going to go into all that stuff because that would be my book, wouldn't it? But when you try to tell someone and an adult does not listen, then you end up in trouble many times. You end up in, you know, very confused, and it can follow you into your adulthood, absolutely. You'll turn to alcohol many times, drugs many times, you know. So that's all I've got to say about that.
Okay, Mary Ellen.
Yep, I'm just listening now. You guys are doing a great job. I don't really know what to say at this point.
That's okay.
Well, I'll tell you, I probably misunderstood the gist of the show because I didn't tell my story in the way that it was just described. But anyway, I tried to tell a gazillion times, and it fell on deaf ears over and over and over. Or on predators, as I said, the first person I tried to tell was a predator himself. But I also went to, I wasn't ashamed either. I was just pissed off and hurt.
Absolutely.
I went to Planned Parenthood. I went to everywhere I could think of because there was no help for me. They threw me out because I was a guy. And, you know, things like places like that are for women only. They treated me like I was the devil. And, you know, I'm sorry to say it, but, you know, the reaction that I had to wait until I was ready to get clean and sober. I didn't tell my story because of, relief from trauma. I told it because I wanted to get relief from drinking and using drugs, and I told it as part of that. But it turned out that it was the perfect forum for me to tell, you know, my story in pieces, little pieces, and little bigger pieces and bigger pieces, and finally in the setting of my whole story, and even at a couple of conventions. So, but it took me a long time to be heard. I even went to a psychiatrist, and people who know me know this, long before I got sober, with my parents. And I told my story there. And I got absolutely no help because he didn't know what to do with me back in that era anyway. So, yeah, you tell your story over and over and over, and each time you do it, if you don't, in effect, get help, it's hard to tell it the next time. It's harder. It's even harder. It's even harder. It's even harder. This is why we need to believe kids and young people and anybody who comes forward at NASCA the first time. You know, we may be wrong on rare occasions, but believe me, people don't tell these hard stories unless they're true. They don't make this stuff up, you know? So I want to be sensitive
to
the listener out there. Yeah, you're right? We believe you.
Yeah.
And we want you to know that we're here for you if you're a new person out there. And
absolutely.
No matter how many times you've told it before, keep telling it, keep telling it, keep telling it. You will tell it to the right person or persons. And in our case, there are, what do you think, Pamela, thousands of us, right, at this point.
That's right. That's right.
Ready to ready to hear your story and ready to believe you.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Well, so, I think in homes, all right, I think, Annie, correct me if I'm wrong or if you think differently, because you are the co-host here tonight. But in homes, when you come from a normal home,
Excuse me, we didn't finish the panel. We need to let the next two people tell.
Okay, all right. Well, okay. Okay, let's, how about Mary Knight? Let's get her on.
Yeah.
And then, Darlene, you'll be after that.
Mary Knight?
I can't unmute it. Oh, can you hear me?
Yes, we can hear you. Go ahead.
Oh, I'm sorry. I thought I did have it. I feel like I got to share enough about mine. I already shared about the fact that I've, made a film and also one about my first marriage. I looked up Annie's book on Amazon. So that was The Ugliest Word. I like that title. And I didn't know if Annie wanted to say more about her book.
Tell you that it's a novel, it's not a memoir, and I wanted to hit on some of the most common points that happen in childhood sexual abuse, like grooming and that kind of thing, attachment to the perpetrator. So it's a novel, but it's based on real people's stories. I spent a couple of years on a phone conference line for survivors of childhood incest. And on that line, I heard so many stories over the years, and a lot of things over and over, you hear the same thing, the same element of the story. And so that's what I tried to gather together in the novel. And I thought a novel reads easier than a memoir, I think. I hope that it reads easy, even though it's a hard topic. Thank you.
Yeah, I read a couple of pages from it, and it looks good. Yeah.
Thank you.
And I will say, if anyone wants to see my things, I have a website, MaryKnightProductions.com. So if anyone wants to see the films I mentioned, then that'd be great.
Mary, you're coming on Monday, right?
I am.
Right. She is.
Okay, that's good.
Okay.
That's good. Okay, so you three got it together there. Let's go down to Darlene here in Texas. I was going to say Texas and Tennessee. Go ahead, Darlene. Do you have anything you want to say?
I can act like a Texan and say, howdy, folks.
I wouldn't want to be in Texas right now. Go ahead.
I wouldn't mind being in Texas, you know. I reside in Tennessee. Okay, never mind. But I missed part of the question because I had an important phone call, and it's good that there's a person called in because they're letting me know that there's a lady that's wanting to become a NASCA ambassador. And so they're going to contact me later. So I'm in between calls, to call me back and forth, So I missed some part of the conversation here. I'm so sorry about that. So I didn't know what the question was.
Annie, why don't you help her with that? Yeah, go ahead, Annie. What would you like her to respond to? Go ahead.
I kind of was wondering about the common characteristics like shame and blaming yourself and attachment to the perpetrator. Do you find that those things are true about yourself?
Oh, yeah. It took forever for me to stop blaming myself. I would always blame myself. And my therapist got tired of me saying, well, it's all my fault. It took years for me to stop blaming myself and put the blame into the proper perspective, It's the adult's responsibility for raising us, and it was nothing that we done, not our behavior, anything. It's their responsibilities to bring us up in the right way.
right.
But that shame and everything, and I still have nightmares about, you know, and you can tell this is a sexual oriented dream when you're constantly feel having a dream or having to go to the bathroom in front of people, you know, having to pull your pants down, you know. I have that dream frequently, so I'm still having, I guess, shame. And I exposed myself recently on YouTube, you know, about told my story recently, and I told it plenty of times at NASA. So, but still, when we, it's like when we peel off some of our layers of the shame and the guilt and all that, and then we start feeling some of the hurt also, and then we just got to bandage it softly and then start taking care of that wound again and say, okay, you know, that's the old feeling, and now let's heal, you know, get beyond that, you know, they cannot hurt us anymore.
That's right.
Yeah, but that's, I think that's something people, you know, when they're in recovery, they have to understand that that was, now I don't want to take away from what happened to anyone here on this panel, but I don't want it to define my life, okay? And it doesn't, not anymore, because I won't let it. And
yeah,
I think the people... You know, I think the people, you know, they can get to a certain point in their life where they can move ahead and live their life. Go ahead.
Yeah, and a lot of people have asked me, said, all the abuse and them shooting at you and cut you and all this kind of stuff, how come you don't hate me? And how come you don't? I said, well, you know, I only live one life, okay? I only have one life. I cannot relive it, okay? I said, do I want to be miserable the rest of my life? Or do I want to be happy? I don't think it's fair for me to judge everyone based on what these pedophiles and all these abusers did to me, you know? It's not fair to them because I don't want to be judged. I don't want them to judge me be based on whatever perpetrator hurt them, you know? I would not want that blame to be put on me. So why would I go like that and inflict it on somebody else, you know?
That's wonderful.
Well, that shows that you've, you know, gone, you're one step beyond, okay? In other words, you're like, you're in your recovery and you are recovering and continuing to recover. That's wonderful. Absolutely. You know, we have to live our lives. This is the way I see it. You bet. Come on now. We have to live our lives. And I'm not going to... I'm not going to let those pedophiles, the ones that, all of them, that did things to me ruin my life. And I don't like narcissistic people, and I've come across them. I've come across all different kinds of people in my life, and I won't let them ruin my life either.
Yeah.
No,
today
sir.
Today we talked about, like in a group today, I brought up something. I said, you know, people worried about... getting back revenge. I said, y'all want a good way to get back revenge? And we don't want revenge no more. We used to want revenge in our head. I said, no, I'm not talking about that kind of revenge. I'm talking about the revenge of healing. They don't want us to heal. They don't want us to be better. Let's get our revenge. Let's get ourselves back. That's the true revenge.
Awesome.
Well, let's see what Annie has to say about that. Annie, what
I
do you
totally
have to
agree.
Say about that? Me too.
I totally agree with that. Living well is the best revenge, they say. I also got revenge in my own little way, and that was a scene in my book in which I get revenge on my abuser. It didn't happen in real life, but it happened in the book. And I think a lot of people can identify with that feeling of, yeah, they got what they deserve. Of course, they never do get it. There's no way. There's no way they could ever make up for what they've done.
I want to invite y'all all to, you know, the talk shows that we have on Sundays, Tuesdays, and Thursdays at the support group at 1 o'clock Central Time on on Tuesday, Sundays, and Thursdays.
Well, Pamela, do you have anything to say about that?
Well, are we at a pivotal point to change for Annie to start a new topic, or are we still continuing on a certain topic?
Well, let's let Annie, she's leading us.
Uh-huh. Yeah, I was
told
to let
Annie
to that.
Annie?
Yes.
Oh,
I had an idea for a topic that I discovered in my reading about why people don't talk, why people don't tell. I found this, that some people think it was a love affair they were having. And I wonder if anybody had that kind of feeling as a little kid, that what you were doing was a love affair. And I don't have the list of people.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, let Pamela go. I'll start at the top. Let's see what Pamela has to say about that. Go ahead, Pam.
My stepdad, I had a civil lawsuit with him, and in deposition, he said he was having an affair with me at age 4.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, my goodness.
I didn't reciprocate it, I promise you. I didn't know what a love affair was at 4.
No.
No, that's just a horrible thing for him to have ever said. Shows his ignorance.
And the judge's ignorance, if the judge believed it.
Yeah.
No, okay, let's go down to, are you done? I'm sorry, honey.
Uh-huh.
Are you done or not? Okay. Well, I'm going down the list now, and I won't miss anyone here, so I'm going to, you know. Bill, you're next. Do you have something that you want us to add to that or say something about that?
I had no concept of love for many years. I didn't know what love was. I was not taught that. I was not shown that in my family. And my perpetrator was somebody who had me to himself for a full month, without my ability to even talk to anybody I knew or to escape, certainly, because it happened at a camp where he was a counselor. And I also was a victim of a lot of pornography. And what I was addicted to, if you want to call it that, was the sensations, you know, the sense of being important, of being an object of his affection, if you want, in his camera's, you know, model. And also the physical sensation that a boy can have at that period of time. But it had nothing to do with love. It had everything to do with more. I'd say it was more like an addiction that I didn't understand. And by the time the first month was over, I did know that it was supposed to be a secret. So I went home and didn't tell. Came back the next year, had the same experience for a month, went home, didn't tell. Came back the next year, had for a month, had the same experience, and I was kidnapped at the end of that. Now, that was a very big deal. And it's why when I went to the minor seminary just a few weeks later and had not told anybody about this, I finally was so relieved when that priest asked me to tell me what's been going on with you. He asked me if I'd been a homosexual, if I'd had homosexual experiences, which I was, that was one of the things I was afraid of being accused of. And I said, no. And anyway, when I did tell him the story, you know, it turned out very poorly. So this is not uncommon, these kinds of experiences with children. There's no love affair going on for me, and there never has been, except with Christina, of course, now. My wife now.
Big
yeah.
Oh, brother.
Yeah.
Okay, what do you think about that, Annie?
Yeah, I can see that, you know, that kind of situation, there wouldn't be any love feelings involved. But I remember, I don't remember a sexual component, but I remember really adoring my dad when I was little. You know, little grammar school kid. Oh, that's my dad, yay!
which I shouldn't have. I should have been hating his guts, but, for, you know, I was attached to him. He was my dad.
Right. That's right.
Wasn't a love affair, though.
No. I mean, I turned into a stone when it first occurred. You know, it was not about love or being attracted to him. I was shocked. But he, over that first period of time, you know, kind of, he continued to groom me to the point where the attraction was about being important enough for him to pay attention to me. It was really about that, you know, than anything else. So, anyway, thanks, Carol, for letting me share that.
Okay. Mary Ellen from New York. Is there something you want to say about this? Did you ever feel like you were in a... some sort of love affair with any of your abusers?
Absolutely not. No.
Me neither.
No. I think that it certainly play a role in some incidences, but none that I've ever experienced. No.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, I'll go down to Mary Knight and see what she has to say. Are you there, Mary?
Mary Knight? Can you hear me now? Yes.
Yeah, I can hear you.
Okay. Oh, good. Yeah, I would say that someone who thinks it was a love affair, that's a type of shame. And have I felt shame? Yes. But that's my only comment on that.
Okay. Let's go down to Darlene in Texas. Why do I call you, put you in Texas tonight? I don't know. Tennessee. Darlene.
Darlene?
Darlene, you there? She may not, but she said she may have to leave the phone a couple times here. I heard her say that.
Oh, okay.
Okay. Yeah, yeah. Okay, so let me see. Okay, let's go back to Annie. Pamela, was there something that you wanted to say to any of this?
Well, one more thing is that I did run into a young victim or person, and he was groomed at a camp by another boy. They were both around the age of 14. And he told me that the guy was grooming him and that he actually started feeling feelings towards him, and that he kind of fell in love with him, and that he turned him on to porn, and now he's addicted to porn. So, yeah, it's likely that, you know, love affairs start that way.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, it's two different guys that tell me that.
Mm-hmm.
I guess the
well,
other comment I'd have to that is...
Yeah, go ahead. I was saying, go ahead, Annie. Go ahead.
I don't know if other people have read the book, The Kiss, but it's about incest that began when... It's about adult incest. So the physical relationship began when the woman was 21. And it's a really chilling book to read because... there's dynamics. It's very much with incest. It wasn't an affair, but that's what she thought. But it really gets you, got me and other survivors I know into being able to see some aspects, some dynamics of our abuse that we might not have seen otherwise. The Kiss, a memoir by Catherine Harrison.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's a pretty interesting topic you brought up. This stuff just has so many tentacles, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Well, you know, I think that kids can get really confused. I know of some of my friends who were sexually abused at their homes, and, you know, a lot of incest going on, isn't there? But anyway, the point is this. They have a love-hate relationship, you know, with the abuser. I would say it's the father, all right, with the little girl. Many times the little girl, you know, she loves her father. And the father is telling her all these, you know, false things that this is how daddy shows you that he loves you. Yeah, but it has to be our secret. It has to be our secret. And that's confusing to a child because, as I know from what she said to me, okay, she said that, you know, she loved her father. She loved her father. But she didn't like what he was doing to her. And then she was confused because he'd get angry at times if he thought she was going to tell, because that was their secret. So I think it probably, you know, really can upset a child's mind, very much so, because they want that parent's love, and but they're confused about what love is. What do you think, Annie?
Oh, yes, absolutely. You know, it's an animal love in a way when you're a little kid, you know. It's like you need to hug them. You need to hold your dad's hand, that kind of thing. And but you're so confused because of the other touching. So it just destroyed my brain. I know that. It made me a crazy person.
It's hard.
I just want to tell everyone I need to leave now because it's early where I am. So it's 6 o'clock. So I've got dinner ready and I got to go. But thank you to everyone involved.
Okay.
What's your name?
See you Monday night.
Mary. What? Mary Knight.
Oh, okay. All right. Thank you.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
Okay. Yeah. Well, I think that, you know, it's a very terrible thing. I'm just going to say this quickly. I've been abused inside the home, and I've been abused outside the home, and I think inside the home is worse. Period. That's what I think.
Absolutely.
Because those people, you know, are supposed to love you and teach you and guide you and care for you and, you know, give you the, you know, tell you what to do and what not to do, you know, in life. So when it comes from them, I think that to me is my worst horror. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. So let's see. Does anybody have anything to say about that? And how about starting from the bottom? Darlene from Tennessee, what do you think about that? She might be off. I don't know quite what's going on with her. Okay, Mary Ellen from New York, what do you think about that?
Your comment about in the home or outside the home?
Yeah. Which abuse do you think is worse? Go ahead.
Well, I've, I guess, been involved in a few different types of abuse, but I would say within the home definitely is so traumatic. And even when you think you heal from it, there's so many memories and so many twists and turns where it resurfaces and interferes at different levels. Layers, maybe I would say, throughout your life. So it's definitely a very powerful thing.
It really is. Okay, Bill, what do you think about that?
Well, I mean, I had parents that didn't do any of the things you just talked about, guide and love and show and teach and all, but they didn't molest me. If we're talking sexual molestation, it would be horrible, of course, to have that happen. But they also didn't help me. You know, they didn't. I don't know. I mean, we're here. We're measuring, which we say we don't do. You know, whose abuse is worse than somebody else's? I don't know. Everybody's is horrible. You know, it's horrible in different ways. Yes, but you know, and some people have one instance of one abuse, and it's enough to ruin their lives, right? And there's other people like myself and several other people on the panel tonight, you know, who've had, literally each one of us have had hundreds of incidences of abuse through our childhood that, you know, that ruined our life. I mean, how do you tell? I don't measure. I will tell you one quick thing, though, Carol. I was not a child when it occurred because I was about 20, but I did have an affair with a woman who lived next door to my parents. She was 33, So that's 13 years of a difference. And the and I did feel affection. I don't know love, but affection for her. I was not forced into it, right? But when I look back on it now, I think about all those stories of the young boy in a classroom who has a teacher that he's attracted to and she molests him, or the young girl who has a fantasies about a professor who's, you know, she might be 20 and he might be 35, you know, 15 years difference, a big difference like that, that's still taking advantage of a young person, you know. And to me, it, although it doesn't fall inside the exact measure of child abuse because you're over 18, you're 18 or older. And then there are lots of kids who are in high school and they fall in love with a college student who's 5, 6, 8, 10 years older. That's, is that child abuse? I don't know. But there's a lot of affection or false belief in affection that goes on in those kinds of relationships with somebody who's of a superior number of years and somebody who's an inferior number of years. And it happened with me, but it was when I was about 20.
Well, when I was in school, when I was in high school, there was this gal that I hung out with. We had biology together. And she had a terrible crush on her teacher. Well, the teacher ends up having a terrible crush on her. And there was about many years difference. I could never quite tell how old he was because he was premature with the gray. You know what I'm saying? He premature gray. And a nice-looking guy and all this other stuff and a good teacher. But those two, I remember seeing her the day before she got married. She was I was in her class and so forth. And she was a little bit older than me. So she turned 18. Okay, I wasn't 18. But she turned 18. And after that school year, they got married, and I saw her a day before, and she was the most miserable person. I said, "What on earth is wrong with you? I'm getting married tomorrow." I said, "You mean to the teacher?" Because that's the way I looked at it. And she said, "Yeah, that's him. We're getting married." And she got up and she walked away. I don't know if she made it down the aisle or not. I don't know what happened. But there is a lot of years difference, and I think that sometimes it does work and sometimes it doesn't, because I know people where it has worked. So that's another situation.
But by way of answering Annie's question, there are people I know that do consider themselves, quote, in love with someone who's truly a predator to them. It does happen. Mm-hmm. Not to this panel, it sounds like.
So, is there anything more that you wanted to talk about, Annie? Pamela?
I have one more point I wanted to bring up.
Go ahead.
And that was about memories. Do you have strong memories, or are they just vague memories? And do you feel like you have all your memories, or a lot of them are still suppressed? That's my question.
Okay. Oh, Pamela, go ahead. Do you have memories, or do you feel like they're repressed or whatever? Might have something repressed.
Ever since I got with NASCA and all my repressed memories came up, I had to get a therapist. I've been in therapy, trauma-based therapy for many years now, and I am recovered. I don't have dreams anymore. I don't have flashbacks. I don't think of those people anymore. It's like a wall is up and they don't exist. So there is hope and healing. That's all I want to say to the audience.
Absolutely. I agree with that. Let's see. Let's go down to Darlene from Tennessee. Go ahead. I'm going to start from the bottom. Go ahead.
Hey, I'm back. I'm sorry. I just got to
call. That's okay. I'm not going to ask what you were doing. Go ahead. Go ahead, Darlene. Do you know what the question? Go ahead.
What's the question?
Annie, why don't you tell her the question? Go ahead. How you want her to answer
it. It's about memories. Do you feel like you have all of your memories, or have you suppressed some of them?
I still got a whole lot that I still have to suppress, because I don't want to, if it's remembering, I don't want to remember more than what I've already remembered, because I think it will still be on the edge. Because they said memories go from the easiest to the worst. And my worst memory was seeing my kid killed.
Oh.
And so I don't want to go beyond that, if you know what I mean.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sorry. I still got a lot suppressed, and I don't want to go there because I know I'll go over the edge, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And I don't want to end up suicidal ever again, because when I remember that, I was very suicidal.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's very sad, so, honey. Yeah.
Well, I've gotten a lot more refreshed, and I'm scared to know them. You know what I'm saying?
I do. We've had conversations. I do. But that's a terrible, terrible thing. Yes, it is. You know, and we feel. You know, I feel your pain on that. That would. I wouldn't want to remember anything either. I might do something wild. I don't know. I might. Okay. Let's. Mary Ellen from New York. Well, how would you answer that question?
I think my memories are very vivid, and I believe that I know most of them. So, I guess that would be my answer.
Okay, that's good.
Yeah.
And thank you. Bill, what about you? Thank you, honey. Bill, what about you?
Well, I have a very complete set of memories. I never didn't remember. I was in the moment all the time, and trying to get out of it, you know, and deal with it, but unsuccessfully. And then in recovery, it's gotten a lot better. But I can't say that I don't dream about it anymore. I had a dream last week where one of the priests that molested me, the way he used to do it, he was my Latin teacher. I was a horrible student because I didn't want to be there. I couldn't. I wanted to get away, you know, but I was trapped, sitting at a desk with a book in front of me and some paper and stuff. He would come up and he would lean over me and down sort of over my shoulder, pretending to look at the paper, but he'd take my other hand and he'd put it down in my lap, and he would feel my erection, which I got when he did that. I got an erection. I had that dream last week. Along with the sensation of it. I mean, it doesn't go away for me. It gets a lot better and a lot less frequent, but it never disappeared. Most of them are not as terrifying as they used to be. That's not particularly terrifying, but it sure surprised me. I woke up and went, what was that? You know, I hadn't thought of that in a long time. But, you know, so I think the memories and even the feelings are inside of us all the time, and they can be, you know, they can come out maybe subconsciously, maybe in dream states, and, you know, that's why a lot of us have kind of night terrors. You know, we have what to call them, bad dreams, I guess, but I think my goal is really to make it less and less frequent, but I don't think you get rid of these things. They're in there anyway. They may not have popped out for a long time, but I think they're in there anyway. And my dream last week is an example of that. That happened 50-something years ago, that incident, those kinds of incidents. So that's how I would answer, Carol.
Okay. Pamela, what about you? Is there something that you want to say to that?
Well, you already called on me, but I'll just say again, I'm on the other side of recovery, and I don't even think about those people anymore. All of them abused me, neglect and just you know, they were just not good people. And I don't dream about them or think about them anymore. And I have to say, thank you, Jesus. That's all I can say.
Well, okay, I'll share with that. I don't have any more dreams anymore, no more nightmares. I think that stopped about a year ago. I used to have them, and I have a way of handling my dreams and stuff like that. Then it does work for me. And yeah, I'm where I want to be as far as, you know, doing shows or not doing shows or going out and speaking. And when I can speak, you know, pandemic. I'm happy with myself and content today. So, you know, and I don't let people, you know, in my life that are going to be toxic to me. I won't do that. And the ones that are toxic, if someone does happen to get in, I'll just push them the heck out because we've had enough of that, enough toxic. Okay. So, you know, so it's a long journey that we go on. That's what it is. It's a long journey. That's what we call it, the healing journey. And some of the things you have to understand, you know, people have to understand out there who are listening to this show is that you go maybe 5 steps forward and sometimes 2 steps backwards. And that's okay. And because the next you're going to learn from it and you'll be stronger, okay? And sooner or later, you'll end up saying, I'm feeling good today. I love myself today. I'm doing well today. And have a lot of positive self-talk that's just going to flow from you, and the negative is gone. So I don't look back at those people. I don't care about those people. And the way that I look at it, Pamela, is they have to go before God, and because he's the ultimate judge, and he knows what they did. And that's my
Amen.
Relief from that. That's how I feel about it. Yes.
Amen, sis.
There you go. So, Annie, after with that, what do you think of that?
Well, I don't know that I have a thought. Really.
Yeah, go ahead. Well, you know, we all look at things differently. Go ahead.
I was just going to say about my memories. I don't think I have them all. Because I do have new ones crop up sometimes. The weird thing is during yoga, I guess it releases parts of my body or something, but yoga gives me memories of the abuse. But I do the yoga anyway because I think it's good for me. But I didn't have any memories of the abuse. Well, I did when it was going on, but then I had a mental breakdown when I was in the fifth grade, and I was delusional. I totally lost touch with reality. And after that, I forgot. I forgot about the abuse, and for years and years and years. And when it came back, it was like, pow, hit me in the face. Oh, yeah, that happened. And then once I remembered, I couldn't make it go away again. Mm-hmm. Well, that's all I have to say on that.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's like PTSD. We have our nightmares. We have our flashbacks. We have all different kinds of things that we have to go through. And it's on the healing journey. And we do, you know, with the proper help. I know that I got proper help. You do heal, you know, but you have to work at it, too. You can't expect for the therapist to give all the answers. You have to feed the therapist information. And a lot of times, if she's a really good therapist, though, she can see what's going on without you even saying something. Sometimes people, I had a kid in front of me one time. I'm not a therapist, but I was a counselor. I had kids in front of me one time that just plain refused to speak. And they just sit there and look at me. So I pulled the book out and I started to read. And I didn't speak out loud. I just started to read a book. I did that 3 times, and they couldn't stand it. Then finally they started to speak. So you see, we all have our ways of dealing with people who have problems, and we were one of those people that had terrible problems. What happened to us in the past is not ever going to go away. but I look at it differently today than I did then. And today I'm a happy person. And whereas back then, of course, I was a miserable person. So that's why we call it the healing journey. People out there who are listening maybe for the first time on their computer, we do go on the healing journey, and that's what it is. And but you can't live a productive life. You can't live a life that's happy for you. You have to get in touch with your own inner feelings. And when you've done something wrong to someone, you say, I'm sorry. And, you know, because that's healing too. So often we have our defenses up all the time, and it doesn't mean that we're perfect people. And someone's throwing, you know, rocks at us or something, whatever, and they have to apologize. Sometimes we're the ones that have to apologize, okay, because we're not perfect people. But that's okay, because we're still standing. Yes, we are. And there was a lot of people that wanted us not to be standing, you know. So anyway, we're coming to the end of the show, and I'm going to ask you, I'm going to say, Annie, is there something you want to leave with the people, some type of hope that you can give people? Go ahead.
I'm going to say that I, too, am very happy today. I have a happy life. It's very calm. I do things I like to do. And it's only really been the last 15 years, I think, that I've had any kind of joy. But now I feel cured, if that's such a thing, because I do have joy. And I can think about the memories without my body shaking in response to them, and I think that's
mm-hmm.
healing.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, it sounds like healing to me.
Yep.
But absolutely. So, Bill, is there something you'd like to end the show with?
No, I like that, what she just said, because I didn't mean by telling my story that I'm terribly upset that this dream occurred a couple of weeks, a week ago or whatever, but it was surprising because I thought I had done with that, you know, I thought I was done with that. And apparently, you know, I wasn't. Now, it didn't shock, it didn't upset me. I wasn't even upset. It was just that it surprised me. So I think her saying that she doesn't shake anymore when she thinks about these things, that's really accurate. A lot of times there's so much energy inside of us trying to redirect our thinking, you know, our memories, and to get away from, to try and stop them, which is, you know, interestingly enough, it's what a lot of people tell us when we're before recovery. They say, well, stop thinking about it. Why don't you stop thinking about it? And of course, that drives us crazy. Because you can't. But there's lots of things you can do to lessen the impact. And over time, it gets better and better and better, and you get more and more comfortable inside yourself. So I don't want people to think just because I, who have got a lot of people know, a long-term recovery, had a dream a couple of weeks ago that included this scene. There were lots of other scenes too, I guess, but that's the one that I was surprised about, so I thought I'd bring it up. Anyway, thank you very much, Annie, for filling in, Pamela, for getting here, Carol, for hosting tonight's show, Mary Ellen, Darlene, and Mary Knight, for being on the show. Really appreciate it tonight.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Thank you very much.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you for having
really
me.
Happy show. Okay, everybody. So I'm going to end the show now. And you know what? It was an interesting show. It was a different show. And we'll have a guest on tomorrow, okay? So come on back tomorrow and see what we have to say. So good night. God bless. Stay safe.
Elizabeth,
you know.
Elizabeth, it's Elizabeth Sullivan tomorrow. I recommend
I know.
People call it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Elizabeth Sullivan.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. All right. Good night, everybody, and have a good night and stay safe, okay? Okay. God
Thank
bless.
You.
Good
night.
Night.
Good night.
Blog Talk Radio.